You are listening to the Stillbirth Matters podcast, presented by the Star Legacy Foundation. Learn more at starlegacyfoundation.org. Our guest for this episode of the podcast is Valerie Samuels. In April 2002, Valerie gave birth to full-term twin daughters, Gina and Julia Samuels. Her daughter, Gina, born with trisomy 13, lived for 9 days before she died in her mother's arms. Valerie lives in North Carolina with her 5 surviving children. Well, Valerie, thank you for joining me on the podcast.
Thanks for having me, Chris.
So let's just get right into it, as we do with all of these podcast episodes. Let's start with talking about your journey. And I know that you had twin girls. Why don't you introduce us to them? Tell us their names and your story as it relates to being their mom.
Sure. Well, in 2002, I gave birth to full-term twin girls, Gina and Julia. Gina was born with a trisomy 13 and holoprosencephaly, a very serious neurological challenges. And while I knew prenatally that there may be some problems, we were never told the severity of how difficult or how to the extent of her challenges would be. So we expected that there would be some hospital stay, or that, you know, we would have some extra care or surgeries, but we had no idea that she would not live. When they were born, she was immediately intubated because she was not breathing on her own. And she was intubated for 9 days. And in that time, I came to realize that she was expiring while on life support. And my husband at the time, we decided to have her removed. And she lived and passed away in my arms for about 40 minutes after that. Her surviving sister, Julia, was born without any problems. And it truly was a very bittersweet experience of having one child survive and her twin pass away. A very complicated journey of grief, I must say.
So a lot of the episodes and a lot of the people I interview are people who have either experienced a stillbirth or who are experts on stillbirth. We haven't mm-hmm. talked to a lot of people like yourself whose mm-hmm. child, who eventually passed away, lived for a while. Mm-hmm. And I know every loss is different and we don't compare losses, but I'm curious to know what mm-hmm. that was like when you heard you weren't learning that your daughter Gina was dead right then and there, but you learned it was eventually going to happen very soon. Mm-hmm. What was that like for those 9 days in the hospital? I think people who listen to this podcast, they'd be curious to know what that part of the journey was like.
Right. And I also want to add that on the day of their birth, I received a phone call from the doctor because they immediately rushed Gina, the one who was facing the challenges, to a children's hospital. And several hours after she was born, I was told on the phone that she was not going to live. In that moment, just the shock and the disbelief and the horror and the pain of my child is going to die, and they wanted to bring her to me, was unbelievable. At that moment, I remember thinking and understanding to some degree when a child has passed away, you know, at the time of birth. It felt very much like that, even though it was a different experience. So it was extremely painful. And also with my daughter being in the NICU and not knowing for sure what was going to happen. There was also denial on my part too, because, you know, we want to hold on to hope. I couldn't believe this was happening. Where it was I won't even say a roller coaster ride. It just felt like you were just on the bottom of that coaster for 9 days. It was difficult to breathe. It was difficult to anticipate what was going to happen. I had children at home. My husband and I had four other older siblings, school-age siblings, that we were concerned about, also and as well as her twin sister. So it was a very, very difficult time, a lot of pain, facing that, you know, we might have to let go, and we did, and she did not stay. So it was a real heartbreaking time at that time of our lives.
Let's talk about Julia, the twin that survived and is still living today. And if my math is correct, is she 17 years old?
Yes, she is. Yes.
So, yes, let's talk about her a little bit. And, do you remember how old she was when you started talking about, Gina with her and what those conversations were like?
Sure. We started sharing with her that she had a twin sister ever since we remember. I wore a necklace that had pictures of both girls. And as an infant, and as she began to be a toddler, I remember showing her the picture. She would begin to open up the locket when she got a little bit older as a toddler. I made a scrapbook of her sister and her birth. So if the conversation has always been there. There wasn't a time when she did not know that she had a twin sister. As she got older, and she was involved in some of the activities that I participated in, such as memorial walks or balloon release ceremonies. It was always a part of her life as well. I also prepared her through children's coloring books, you know, that talked about losing a sibling, as I did with my other children as well. And eventually the writing of my book, Always My Twin, was a resource that I wrote to help her and others like her understand that they have a twin, but also how we remember and we will never forget her twin.
It may be hard to answer this question, but I'll ask it anyway. Is there any way to tell how the experience of losing her twin, her being the surviving twin, how that has impacted her personality today or her outlook on life today?
Mm-hmm. Oh, no, that's a very good question. Actually, for her personally, she, when she was very young, she was very quiet. She also liked to always be around someone. She was also very touchy, where if she slept with her sisters, her older sisters, she always had to be touching someone. And I understood that. She had a roommate, you know, she had a sister in the womb. She does not talk a lot. She did not grow up talking a lot about her sister, even though she was very much involved. And I was very careful to not transfer my grief onto her, if that makes any sense, to let her be free in experiencing what she would feel. So I did notice as she got older, if we were at a candlelight service or memorial service, remembering children who had passed away, and she was there, you know, we were there to represent Gina. And if my eyes began to tear up, she would be watching me to see how I was responding and would hold my hand as if to comfort me, which is very sweet and endearing. But on my part, I would think, what must she be feeling? And throughout the years, I've just been patient in terms of when she's ready to talk about her sister or how she's feeling or how she's been processing this throughout the years. I wanted to be ready and gone through healing, not that we're ever all healed, but gone through enough where I can actually provide comfort and support to her. In the meantime, she's a very well-adjusted high school senior. She's a cheerleader. She's been involved in pageants. She is very involved in her school, very outgoing young lady, and very well-balanced. So I'm very proud of her. I do know from some conversations I've initiated with her about talking about her sister or how she feels about certain things. She kind of feels that it's not easy for her to talk about with others because it feels like, you know, it'll bring down the conversation or, you know, maybe it feels negative to other people. So I believe that as she grows and as we continue on this journey, that one day that she'll actually be able to know it's okay to own that and permission to feel what she feels and to talk about her sister without worrying about what others might think about that, and just embrace, you know, who she is and what her own experience is.
So let's talk about this book that you referenced earlier. Am I correct that you had never written a book prior to this?
That's right. That was my first book. Yes, it was.
So it's one thing if you were a author by trade, but you were not. So this is quite the leap for you. Can you talk about this book, Always My Twin? What inspired you to write it, and what is it about?
Yes, absolutely. In 2005, or 2004 or 5, I spoke at a conference for infant loss, infant stillbirth, and miscarriages. And it was a great experience. I went to the bookstore where they were selling resources for people at the conference. And I just happened to notice that there weren't any books that dealt with children who lost a twin. We've seen books for adults, but I had never seen one. I looked for one and hadn't seen one. So I remember saying at that conference that the next time I come back at this conference the following year, I was going to bring a book, and it would be a book on this topic. And I already knew that the name would be Always My Twin, and it's for young children who have experienced the death of their twin sibling. The book talks about the loss, you know, it shows the parents expecting a child, pregnancy. And then there's a point where the book says that one of the twins died. That can reference whether the child died before birth or shortly, you know, at birth or after birth. So it leaves rooms for different people's experiences. And pretty much what I wanted the goal of the book to be was how a twin sibling and her family remembers the twin who passed away. And it chronicles some of the things that we do, my family and I did, and continue to do in memory of our daughter who passed away. And these may be some rituals that you yourself or your audience does as well, such as, you know, we at Christmas time, we have a stocking for her. On birthdays, we remember her with sometimes her own cake, or there have been times when we've had both names on one cake. As Julia has gotten older, I let her decide what she wants to do on a birthday. And sometimes she'll have a cake and we'll have a cupcake in memory of Gina. It shows going to the cemetery, putting ornaments on a tree at Christmas, looking in scrapbooks, watching, you know, looking at her picture. So in other words, that child is not forgotten, and it really focuses on, you know, remembering a child in a family who has passed away.
I think you already touched on this, but I think I've interviewed authors before, and a lot of them, when they write a book, they they envision someone reading it, and that drives them to write the book in the first place. Do you have a scenario in your head of the people you were writing this for and how you envision them reacting to it and what they take away from it?
Yes. I envisioned children who were about the same age as my daughter at the time that I wrote it. She was about 4. So pretty much a preschool age, especially when children can understand a little bit more than obviously in infancy, where they could. Parents have used this over the years to kind of introduce the topic about their twin has passed away or a child has passed away in the family. And that's pretty much what my goal was, to start the conversation or to continue the conversation that has been going on in the family. Over the years, I've had lots of parents that have written me or have suggested how much that they were looking for something to start, you know, a conversation with their child. The child was maybe 4, 3, 4, 5, 6, and they didn't know how to bring up that they had lost a twin. Or there are some that already had, you know, shared with their children that they lost a twin, but they wanted a resource in the house. In their house. There's also a piece in the book that's like a little worksheet that I really envision, like an interactive part for families to do with their children or their surviving twin, which is, it talks about feelings, where they can circle, how do I feel? You know, how am I feeling today? You know, what makes me happy? What makes me sad? There's also a place where you can put a picture of your family. family and your twin, if you have one. And there's a family tree in there where you can write your parents' name, your twin's name, your siblings' names, just to tangible, put some substance to the loss, where many families don't have a lot of memories and don't have a lot of tangible things to commemorate that child's life, and also something special for the child who survived.
I know that between the idea of coming up with a book idea to the day that it actually gets published, there are a million obstacles in the way where you could have said, no, I'm not doing this anymore. but I'm wondering, did you self-publish it or did you work with a publishing company?
Well, for this book, I self-published. And what helped make it a really a great fulfilling journey was my illustrator, Naja Clemens. I met her maybe a couple of years before I wrote the book. She experienced a stillbirth. She lost a stillbirth, a little daughter who was born stillborn about a year before my Gina was born. And so she understood and she got it. So I was able to explain to her what I wanted it to look like. And her illustrations just made things so easy that it really was a pretty fluid process. It wasn't difficult at all, but it also was very fulfilling to me because it allowed me to do something, as many bereaved parents feel like we want to do something, you know, in memory of that child or for our surviving children. And so that it was very helpful to me as also it was helpful to the people who I knew would be having it in their families.
Well, that is a beautiful collaboration among two lost moms.
Yes, yes.
So it's been 13-ish years since the book was published, and I'm assuming that because the target audience is very targeted and niche, that it hasn't sold a million copies, but I know that probably wasn't your goal. How has the public responded to your book, and how would you assess the overall response in the public?
Well, I will share this. When the book first came out, this is before social media, back in 2006, so Facebook and Instagram wasn't quite around. I had a book signing in my community, and I had about 100 books at that time on hand, and they all sold out then.
Wow.
I was able to present my book through email. People contacted me from different support groups. And so I did it that way for many years. What happened recently was huge. I reintroduced the book about maybe 6 months ago. It wasn't even that long. My publishing company reprinted the book in a larger version. So it's the same book. It's just that it's in a much larger version, which I'm really thankful for. And I reintroduced it on social media in the many support groups that I belong to. Parents of Twinless Twin is a huge group of parents that about 4,000 strong that come in and, you know, seek support. So I was able to post it there, and the response was phenomenal. There were lots of parents that already had the book and were, you know, giving great reviews, and lots of parents that were looking. They were newly bereaved and they wanted something. So I was really pleased by how much you can do yourself now on Instagram, on social media, you know, Twitter and Facebook. Really a lot different than 13 years ago.
There's another part of your journey I wanted to talk to you about, and I know that was shortly after the loss of Gina. Mm-hmm. You started a ministry.
Yes.
Can you talk about what inspired you to found that practice?
Yes, yes. I'm the type of person where when I experience something, I like to talk about it. I like to seek help about it and find others that going through the same experience. So shortly after Gina's death, I sought out support groups in my area. I lived in Maryland at the time, and I found a few, but they were not very close to where I lived. So I would travel quite a bit to get to them. It was about maybe a year after she passed away that I really felt led to start a support group in my own community through my church, where I could come, but also people who were local to me could come without traveling very far. It was called a Mother's Heart Ministry, and it did very well. We were able to advertise, and we had people come not only within the church, but also throughout the community, and just a safe place to come and share. And this was all types of losses. For children, most people came, you know, children who were maybe under six, but we also had parents there who had miscarriages, stillbirths, infant loss. So it was open to anyone who was hurting from the loss of a small child or after or before pregnancy, or through, I'm sorry, during the pregnancy.
I think my final question for you is, now that this podcast has been up and running for a couple of years, it's amazing the comments we get from people that say a certain episode really spoke to them, or they listened to it at the perfect time in their life. So That leads me to this final question for you, which is, if there's someone who's listening to this who just recently experienced what you experienced back in 2002, what advice do you have for them?
The first thing I would say is just to let them know, first of all, that you are not alone. I would say to seek support. There are lots of support groups. They're online, or you can find them in person. Compassionate Friends is a support group that you can actually go to. Online, we have Parents of Twinless Twins, and particularly if you've lost a twin, there's also a group called Twinless Twins International. And there are lots of grief support groups. I would say it's a very difficult journey to try to go through by yourself. Sometimes family members, extended family, don't quite get it or understand, or they'll be very supportive right in the very beginning. 6 months later, people tend to think that, you know, we should be over it. And that certainly is not true. It's a tough journey. I would definitely recommend not going it alone. No others are here to help hold you up.
Well, Valerie, it has been more than 17 years since you lost Gina, but here we are still talking about her, and her legacy still lives on through you. Thank you for all of the amazing things you have done and continue to do. And thank you for making time to appear on the podcast today.
Thank you. Not a problem. It was my pleasure. And also just wanted to add that Always My Twin is available on Amazon.com.
Thank you for doing that final plug. So Amazon.com and the name of the book is Always My Twin, and the author's name is Valerie Samuels.
That's right. Thank you. Thank you so much, Chris, for the opportunity.
Thank you. That's all for this episode of the Stillbirth Matters podcast, presented by the Star Legacy Foundation. I'm Chris Duffy. Thanks for listening.